Blog Talk Radio.
This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand, this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Good evening and happy Shabbat to one and all, wherever you may be. We've got Kirk and JB here. How are you, fellas?
Good. Doing good.
Good. Well, I read yesterday that the Trumpster said that, that we're could well end up going to war and being a major, major conflict. Everything has to be repeated with the Trumpster, with North Korea. What do you think that would happen if we decided to bomb or invade North Korea?
My God.
Lots of people would die and we'd make a bad situation worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. That's self-evident, yeah.
Yeah, upset that they've got nuclear bombs? Do you think they would use them?
Probably.
You got nothing to lose if you fire them, if they're going to lose everything.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, you've got a 27-year-old dictator, old chubby cheeks, and what are they
maniac?
I mean, yeah, what do you think that he's going to be respond rationally, or that he's going to be bullied or cowered into to capitulation?
I don't think he has enough sense to be bullied.
No. So, you know, if you're the Trumpster,
he's one of those literally thinks he's a god.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they do. They think they're gods. So, you know, if you're Trump, how can you not think this through and say, you know, it's pretty stupid to be threatening? Mind you, our issue with North Korea is the fact that they're have a nuclear bomb and they're shooting off missiles. Do we have nuclear bombs?
Yes.
Yeah, more than the rest of the world combined, last I checked.
Yeah. Yeah, tens of thousands of them. Do we shoot off missiles?
Every damn day.
All the time?
Yeah, with great regularity.
Yeah, we do.
So what we're doing is we're declaring ourselves Lord and Master of the world and saying that what we do, we can do because, well, we're us.
We're us.
But you can't do it because, well, why? Because we don't want you to.
Because we get to run the world.
Yeah. Well, what if one of the
rockets? You're not telling the world that we have to bomb the Syrian airports because somebody deployed some gas and killed some children. Not a bad thing, clearly. But how is that a threat to United States' vital interests?
No.
I mean, that's what they said. We justified it because it was a threat to American vital interest. I don't know how you get from here to there.
I don't even know what our vital interests are when you define it the way they define it. I mean, what's in Syria that we want?
Oh, God, nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
We
want to eliminate ISIS. And we say we want to eliminate Assad, and yet they're foes of one another.
Right.
If you eliminate one, you get the other. You can't eliminate both. You can eliminate Assad. You can eliminate ISIS. You can't eliminate both. And
you can get out the way and let them kill each other.
Yeah, and should you even attempt to eliminate both, what are you going to end up with? Wouldn't you end up with Hezbollah?
Oh, yeah, which is worse.
I cannot figure out how anyone could think that Hezbollah is somehow better than the Islamic State or Assad.
There is no possible good out.
Well,
no.
You know, going back to North Korea a minute. If they shoot off an errant rocket and they start hitting Japan because they can't reach California,
right?
What do you think the Japanese are going to do? Aren't they going to engage? And then don't you escalate just like World War I, World War II?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
I mean, they're going to just sit there and say, oh, please defend me. They got nuclear weapons.
Yeah, they. You know, we've sent a battle group, an aircraft carrier battle group, to North Korea. And the North Koreans said, great, start your practice.
We can't hit your land. We can hit your ships. Thanks for bringing them over.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, that's the target we hit. We are stupid. We're beyond stupid.
Well, I don't get why we do it. I mean, it is
What end are we doing these things?
I mean, I don't know. You know, today we announced, you know, we lost two Americans in Afghanistan this past week. And, of course, this is after us killing 100 or so civilians accidentally. And then us deploying the mother of all bombs to indiscriminately kill a whole bunch of other people, if any, or just to scare some camels to death. And the two people that two American servicemen that were killed in Afghanistan this week, yeah, friendly fire. We shot
well,
our
they
own.
Can't get them. We can.
Yeah, they can't kill them.
Isn't that the vast majority of injuries right in modern war?
Yeah, we need to have a reason to be mad. So I guess we'll just kill Americans and we'll blame them for us killing them. Fog of war, you know. All right, we're going to return to Israel 3,000 years ago. This is circa about 970 BCE, and Dodd, God love him, had made a horrendous decision. Two, really. Three, perhaps. One is he decided he was going to rely on his military and was going to do a census of how many troops he had. God says, no. Your military is irrelevant. Either rely on me or you rely on your military. But if you rely on your military, you're not relying on me. So that was mistake one. Then mistake two is he got self-indulgent and remembered, hey, boy, there's some really fine-tasting water in a well that comes out of Bethlehem. The fact that there's some enemy forces there, what's the big deal if I send some of my special forces troops and they get me a cup of water from the well in Bethlehem? And when they came back with it, of course, he threw it out in the ground and said, you know, that's probably a really bad idea. Yahweh was not pleased, and he said, okay, Dodd, here's the deal. I asked you to shepherd the sheep, and now you're self-indulgent, and you're become nothing but a military man. So, you know, you got these three options of consequences. And two of the consequences would cause a lot of sheep to die. And one of them would cause Dodd to have to hoof it around Yisrael for a period of a few months while some bad guys chased him and made his life uncomfortable, probably miserable. He was an old guy at this point. He wouldn't be able to cuddle up with Bathsheba at night. And so was self-indulgent at this point, and he chose. And so a plague killed 70,000 Israelites. Now, the reason that plague is, and that's where we left off prior to just going into what transpired in terms of the conversations on the threshing floor. And And I wanted to repeat this because of two reasons. One is Dode coming to purchase the threshing floor that became the Temple Mount was a direct result of a leadership mistake in shepherding the flock that led to a plague that killed 70,000 people. And so there's a direct correlation between what would transpire on the Temple Mount and deadly plagues that are the consequence of bad leadership decisions. It sets the Temple Mount up, the House of Yahweh up, as a place to resolve the deadly consequence of human leadership mistakes. And the second reason I want to bring it up is that I have this tendency to put Dode on my favorites list, on a pedestal, if you will. I think he's the smartest man who ever lived. And we know that Dode was the perfect conveyor of how to observe the Torah, because he really lived a crappy life. He did so many things that were stupid. And this is just an example of him being stupid. Even the stuff that he did that necessitated the consequence is just an example of him doing some really, really bad stuff. For Yahweh to say that Dode is my favorite and to say that he is righteous and therefore Tzedak vindicated means that the religious proposition promoted by Paul that became the basis of Christianity, that the Torah could not be saved, therefore there had to be a New Testament based on salvation by grace and a dying and resurrecting God, is wholly and completely bogus. There is no person that God could have picked to better refute the notion that you have to obey all of the Torah or you'll be condemned by the entire Torah than Dode.
I don't even know of a church that would let David in.
Of course not.
To show how ridiculous it is. I mean, they would say they would shun him. Day one.
Oh. Yeah, you mean, you know, it's one thing to be a pastor and be cavorting with the parishioners'
wives.
It's another thing to have a harem and to be fathering children from so many women that you can't even keep count of your kids. You know, it's one thing to make some mistakes in your relationship with God. It's another thing to make a mistake that's so egregious 70,000 people die.
Yeah. Instead of you. Yes.
Yeah. And, of course, they wouldn't let him into their church because Dode was Torah observant.
Well, that too.
He'd be up there yelling and condemning them at every word.
They're your enemies of God. Absolutely. So there's a lot of reasons to view all of this in context. And it also emphasizes the nature of the place that Yahweh picked to present this remedy. Number one, it was immediately adjacent to Dode's home. Yahweh's home for the covenant would be right next to Dode's home because Dode serves as an exemplar. Number two, it was a threshing floor. A threshing floor is the place where grain, which is symbol of symbolizes saved souls, is separated from the chaff, which is far more plentiful. That is that which is dries up, withers away, and is dissipated in the wind. That is a metaphor for those who, are estranged from Yahweh. So this is all taking place there. So this is what it says after Yahweh told the Malach to pull down his hand. Then the messenger of Yahweh. Now this is interesting. It was the messenger of Yahweh. It wasn't Yahweh himself. Now Dode's his favorite person on earth. This was a serious thing. He as a consequence of Dode's poor shepherding, he had seen to it that 70,000 people died. I mean, God's serious about it. There's a consequence when leaders do stupid stuff. There is a consequence, and here, even under those circumstances, he sent a messenger. I'm a lock. I mean, that's like the you know, the idiots that score a touchdown or hit a home run or, you know, have some something that happens positive in their life and they thank God for making it so.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, God didn't intervene and come down and meet with Dode under these circumstances. It was the establishment of his home and the remedy for dealing with the aftermath of 70,000 people dying in the very place that he was going to fulfill his promises. And he didn't show up in person. So what do you think the odds are that God's involved in your home run or your good shot? Then the messenger of Yahweh appeared. It means the messenger of Yahweh was visible. His light would be visible. Upon the threshing floor, the Goren, the outdoor area of smooth stone bedrock, where grain is processed, winnowing the desired kernel from the useless chaff, of Aruna. You think this fellow Aruna, who is a Yabusi, you think that that his mommy and daddy named him without some intervention? Or do you think maybe we chose the name Aruna, which means light of the ark, from Aron, Ark of the Covenant, and Aruka, to repair and restore a relationship, as well as based on Or, which is light.
Mm-hmm. No, this is
that's a pretty good
pure coincidence.
Yeah, pure coincidence. Aruna, light of the ark, from Aron, Ark of the Covenant, informed free will, Aruka, to repair and restore a relationship, and Or, light. He was, of course, a Yabusi. Couldn't have been a Jebusite, could he?
Nope.
Why could he not have been a Jebusite? That was correct.
There was never
no
any
such thing as that. No. There was no J in the Yabusi language, much less Hebrew. And Yahweh was speaking Hebrew. So Dode spoke to Yahweh upon seeing his messenger crippling and condemning, knocking and wounding, disabling and slaying, verbally criticizing the people. Now, a lot of people view, okay, well, Yahweh's therefore, you know, intolerant, he's mean-spirited, he's wrathful, he's, you know, this is God killing. And this is not God saying, I'm a big-time operator, I kill you if you not, you know, behave. You know, so this is not Allah. This God sent his messenger, killed 70,000 people. So, what gives God the right to do that? Why is it right for God to do so and wrong for everyone else? You know, thou shalt not make a practice of killing. Want to take a stab at that?
Well, he didn't make a practice of it either. But
no, he didn't.
And it's his universe.
It is.
He gave the gift of life. He can take it back.
That is correct. Yeah. You know, when if JB, you get a crazy spur and you decide you want to take out the neighborhood, you did not give them life. You did not create the species of humankind. You don't have the right to kill it. Yahweh gave these people life. He created them. It's his universe. If he thinks that 70,000 people who would have had no chance of getting to know him, having their souls cease to exist, which is not a punishment, is going to be an effective tool to inform the rest of us that life and death is serious.
Mm-hmm.
Making the right choice versus the wrong choice. I mean, he had three choices. He made the wrong choice. It had a consequence. It was important for God to convey that if you make the wrong choice about options that I am giving you, the consequence is life and death. And if you're in a leadership role, that life and death is magnified, particularly if you're somebody that I have inspired and that is knowingly representing me. So that's why it was appropriate for God to do so. So Doe spoke to Yahweh upon seeing his messenger crippling and condemning Naka, the people, saying, "Behold, I bear the blame for my mistakes. Chata, I am culpable for erring and going astray. I have failed. And in addition to that, Awa, I was wrong." You know, one of the few compliments that I receive routinely, I get it a lot from UJB, but I get it from a number of other people, is a willingness to admit that I was wrong, and also willingness to say, "I'm not sure of this. This is my conclusion based on the evidence, but you know, if you have a different conclusion, that's certainly fine." Being able to say, "I was wrong," is hugely important if you're going to have a quality relationship. If you're going to be an advocate for the truth, since we are flawed humans, we can't be right all the time. And the best remedy for that is to say, "I was wrong." Plus, when it comes to growing, becoming more than you are, understanding, it's essential to know where you're wrong so that you can, yeah, replace it with what's right.
I hate being wrong. So if I'm wrong, I want someone to point it out to me and show me where I'm wrong so I can be right.
Yes. Yeah, I don't hate admitting I was wrong, but I don't want to
be
wrong.
I hate being
because,
wrong.
Right, because if I'm wrong, I'm advocating something that is counterproductive, that could lead someone astray.
But
and
you,
so it's really, really important. Yeah, and it's
for
also,
those of
the
new listeners, I mean, and new readers, I mean, you've been that way from day one. That's what's been so easy to follow along with what you're writing and so forth and studying. I mean, when you come up with something that's wrong or something that's questionable, you've always said, "Well, let's examine it again," you know. And,
yeah,
and more times than not, is we discover more things. But when
yeah,
you find something that's, you know, that's not quite right, you turn on a dime. That's pretty fun.
I mean, how long did the overhaul of Yada Yada take after you wrote Questioning Paul?
Oh, yeah, seven edits of it. You know, part of it I had to eliminate anything Paul said from it. But also, you know, the thing to first change was I had to remove any reference to a renewed covenant. I knew there was no new testament. But I learned in reading Yirmiyah, when I started to do the, in fact, this actually came from an Oxford professor that I corresponded with for a number of years. I was telling him, you know, as I read the Torah, there's only one covenant. And he says, "Well, you know, in Isaiah, or excuse me, in Jeremiah, it says there is a new covenant, and that the new covenant is different than the old covenant. So how can you say there's only one covenant?" So, of course, I went into Jeremiah 31, and began to translate it. And sure enough, it does speak of the covenant, but it uses kadash, which means renewed and restored, not new. And it negated his argument because the renewal and restoration was going to be with Yehudah and with Yisrael, not with the Gentile church. And it said, yeah, it is going to be different. Yeah, that's right. That's with, not what. And it said, yes, it is going to be different. Oh, you know, wow, maybe I was wrong.
One
and
difference.
Then he claims, yeah, the difference is that I'm going to, one or two, depending on how you look at it. But the primary difference is I'm going to place my Torah in you, and I'm going to write my name on your heart. So, okay, so you can't be a Christian if he's going to write his name, Yahweh, in your heart, and he is going to place a perfect copy of the Torah within you. It's for damn sure there can't be a New Testament based upon a repudiation of the Torah. If the Torah is the basis of the affirmation. And it sure as hell can't be a religion based upon Christ and Christian if the name that's going to be written on our hearts is Yahweh.
And Jesus.
Right. So at that point, I now knew that every place I had referred to the renewed covenant, oh, it's a glaring mistake. And it wasn't a small mistake, a big mistake. So I had to rewrite the entire book. And then my good friend Dode from down under in the land of the Kiwi was listening to a radio program where a bunch of Christians said that the Torah is obsolete, and that according to Paul, the Torah cannot save, and that the book of Galatians is a wholesale repudiation of the Torah. And Dode says, to me, if what we read in Galatians is true, then what they're saying is right, well, at least according to Paul. So the question is, is Paul being mistranslated? Did Paul actually say the Torah can't save? Did he actually say in Romans that the Torah is dead? Did he say in both Galatians and Romans that there's a new covenant? Did he say that the old covenant was with Hagar and therefore enslaved? Did he say that, or has he been misrepresented? And so that started a book called Questioning Paul, which had about 600 pages. Started off trying to explain, justify what Paul was saying and make sense of it. And then when he got to his replacement covenant, and the old covenant being with Hagar and therefore enslaving, I said, nope, can't fix that. And so that became a 1,200-page book, and now I had to eliminate every positive thing I'd ever said about Paul.
Because was that a blow to you, or was that thrilling?
Oh, that was a blow. That was a blow.
I thought it was thrilling.
No,
I really did.
Oh, yeah. The reason it was
wonderful.
A blow to me is I thought the only thing I really possessed that I thought had any value was the ability to be rational, you know, to look at things and to be able to reason my way through them. And Paul, on the flimsiest of arguments, fooled me. I mean, I was embarrassed. How could I have been that stupid?
I was
embarrassed.
No, you should be embarrassed.
I was horribly embarrassed that I was played for a fool. And then, particularly as obvious as it is, and then the next was, oh my God, this is going to be a year of my life. It's going to take me a year to go through a 3,500-page book and make all these changes. And it was another year to rewrite Questioning Paul to make it bulletproof. And now it's 1,200 pages. But those are all examples of, we don't get to pick and choose truth. You know, we're not entitled to our own facts, and opinions are useless. You know, if you're going to be an honest seeker of truth, you have to go where the words lead. And in this case, where the words lead. So, yeah, that's Dode is acknowledging with Yahweh that it's A-okay to say, I was wrong. Now, Dode didn't say, my behavior. Yeah, David didn't say, my behavior was bad. I want to go to confession. No. What he said here is, I made the wrong decision. I came to the wrong conclusion. My thought process was errant. He didn't say I was bad. He said I was wrong.
Yeah,
there's nothing more important with Yahweh than being right. Being right is life. Being wrong is death. Being good is irrelevant, as is being bad.
Now that's a mouthful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really a mouthful. Okay. Yeah, it's
that changes 99% of everybody's position on
God.
On everything ethical in God, yes.
Mm-hmm. That God is not interested in us being good. He's interested in us being right.
That's right.
Dode was bad, but right, most of the time. This particular time, he was wrong. And it's okay that Dode was wrong on occasion because he was willing to say, oops, I was wrong. Yeah. And he didn't just say it once, he said it twice. He's, behold, I bear the blame for my mistakes. I'm culpable for erring. And I was wrong. It's stunningly powerful. I mean, that's the thing that you'll never hear in religiosity. A Christian pastor may acknowledge that they behaved poorly, but they'll never say that.
I have sinned.
Yes, I've sinned.
Hey,
you know, when I went out with that prostitute because I got caught.
When I absconded
with all that money because
church.
I got caught. Yeah, because I got caught. That's bad behavior. God's not looking for a confession on bad behavior. You know, Doe didn't say, you know, I ought not have counted the troops. I ought not have asked for the glass of water. I ought not have been having cuddle time with Bathsheba because she was another man's wife. He didn't say I was bad. He didn't say I sinned. He said I was wrong.
You know, if a Christian pastor got up in front of their church and said, I was wrong. I have lied to you all these years.
Mm-hmm.
There is no Jesus.
Yeah, God cannot die. The Trinity is a pagan concept. Christmas and Easter are both born and bred in Babylon. Sunday is the day that sun gods wish to be worshipped. The whole concept of a worship service is asinine. A God that would want his creation to worship him isn't worth knowing. And God doesn't have a church. And Paul, by the way, was a false prophet.
Yep.
I was wrong. I was mistaken. I am culpable. Yeah, that's not like Peter said. Don't say it. Now, Yahweh evidently likes that. Because from that moment, all was forgiven. Yahweh likes it. So we don't have to be 100% right to be right with God, to be vindicated by him. Dode wasn't 100% right. You know, we know he wasn't good, and we know he was bad. And although he was more right than anyone I've ever experienced, he wasn't always right. I was wrong. He says, but these sheep, oh, now he's finally concerned about them. What have they done? Please let your hand be with me and with my father's house. So what he is saying here is, again, partially wrong. He's at least come back to the concept, you asked me to be a shepherd for these sheep, to lead and protect the people, and I did just the opposite. So he's at least come back to a realization, I need to be looking out for their interests. But the question isn't that he should be asking, you know, what have these sheep done? The reason that they died is not because of what they did, it's because of what Doe did. There is a consequence when political leaders make bad decisions. You know, that's why Yahweh wants us to be dependent upon him as our leader, because he does not make bad decisions. People do. Even the best of people make bad decisions. So Doe didn't understand that, and we now have the benefit of doing so. Now, one of the things that's really interesting here is that Doe is Yahweh's favorite son, and yet we're criticizing here openly, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that God's offended that we're criticizing his favorite person in the world?
No, it's written for us to understand these very things and discuss these very
exactly.
things.
Exactly. Exactly.
We are learning right. from his mistakes.
Yeah.
That's
right.
You know, that's what you want your kids to do.
Reinforce it.
If Doe could hear it, do you think he'd be bothered that we're saying, you know, that was you're a smart guy, but that was really stupid?
No, he would he would chirp in. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't make the yeah. same mistake I did.
Don't make that same mistake.
I always said,
yeah,
you know,
exactly.
A smart person learns from his mistakes. A wise person learns from others' mistakes.
There you go. So, and Gad, now we talked about this before, it bears repeating. For all of those idiots out there, I shouldn't say idiots, that's pejorative.
Yeah.
For all of those
confused people out there,
zealots out there who say, you can't write God, you can write G-D, but you can't write God because, you know, Yahweh, I don't even know it's Yahweh, but, and they'll even use the Lord, said that you can't, that the names of false gods ought not be on your lips. Who was Gad for crying out loud?
A pagan god.
Well, no, Gad was Yahweh's spokesperson.
Oh, no, the guy that came
prophet.
To David. No, yes.
Yeah, the prophet.
Right.
Yeah, Gad was the prophet. It's GD.
Yeah.
So if God is going to have a prophet named
Gad,
it's for damn sure that we ought not be concerned about writing God. Spelled the same way in Hebrew. God and Gad spelled exactly the same way in Hebrew.
Gimel Galat.
So, you know, yeah, lighten up, folks. And Gad came to Dod on that day and said to him, get up. You know, this is another interesting aspect of all of this. I've made some doozies of mistakes in my life, and sometimes when those mistakes are public, as Dod's mistake was eminently public, your self-esteem falls so low that, you know, the term would be depressed and depression. I used to refer to myself at some of these times as lower than a worm on a hot day. You know, you really get depressed. And as a depressed person, you don't want to get out of bed. You don't want to get up. You just don't want to wallow. You don't want to deal with anything. And so what's Yahweh through Gad's first instruction to Dod?
You know, stand up. Arise.
Stand up. Arise. You know, one of the things I learned, yeah, the last time that I was, the last time I was depressed was when I found myself on the cover of Business Week, where not a thing that they wrote about me was true. But it, 14-page cover story in Business Week, it'll get your attention, and particularly since it was so demeaning. And I was really low. A lot of friends came over, tried to pick me up, and finally I realized, you know, there is a solution to all this. Just get up, get going, and start doing something worthwhile again. Make a contribution. Start doing something worthwhile, and the depression will flee. And so that was the advice to Dod. Get up. Allah. Ascend. By the way, this Allah is written with the ain, not the alef. It's not the same as the wannabe God of Islam. Rise and be lifted up. Climb up to overcome. And that's not just a law, rise up. It's a law followed by kum, as in kumbaya.
Mm-hmm.
Kum means to stand up. Yeah, so, yeah, kumbaya would be stand with God. Ba is with, and Yah's familiar version of Yahweh's name. So, get up and stand up, Allah kum, to approach La, Yahweh. You don't get to Yahweh on your knees. Stand up. You know, God's, you admitted you were wrong. You want to make things right. You want to be right. So stand up, rise, and approach Yahweh that way. He doesn't want you down on your knees. He's not judging you.
And you can't wallow even if you stand up and start walking.
Right. Via Yahweh. Via a sacrificial altar, a place to make an offering of thanksgiving, in association with the threshing floor, the Goren, of Aruna, light of the ark, the Yabusi. So, it's interesting here that Yahweh had this threshing floor owned by a Yabusi. Weren't they Yabusi the one that said, you know, Dod is never going to come here? Boy, we are the hot stuff here, and there's no way with our on this elevated ground that he will ever be able to overcome us. And Doge just cut off the water supply, and that was it. But you notice, and that was it for them. But you'll notice that and by the way, he didn't have to do anything else. But you notice that the prime piece of property on that ridge was owned by this fellow, and that he didn't have it confiscated. Still his. So that says a lot about the nature of the transaction that transpired here. So Dode ascended consistent with the word of Gad because it was in accord with Yahweh's instructions and directions. You know, if Gad had said, get on your knees and crawl, beg, he would have said, no, 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 I'm not doing that.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
No.
But how would he know that it was in accord with Yahweh? In other words, when I had, I think it was the fellow that I had nicknamed Moody Jeff, when, because he said he went to Moody Bible College, to distinguish him from the other Jeffs.
Mm-hmm.
And he was writing, he says, you know, how do you go about picking and choosing what you think is trustworthy and what is not? You know, you condemn the New Testament, but then you know, you say that some of Matthew is reliable. Aren't you just picking and choosing? And what gives you the right to be able to do that? Well, what do you think gave Dode the right, the ability to discern that what Gad said was consistent with Yahweh's word?
Because he knew. He knew the Torah.
Yeah, he was familiar with the Yahweh, familiar with the Torah, so he knew what was consistent and what was inconsistent. This was consistent.
Mm-hmm.
How do you know that that Paul lied, that the book of Acts cannot be trusted, that Hebrew can't be trusted? That
totally inconsistent.
Right, because it's not
nothing consistent to it. Inconsistent.
If it's consistent with Yahweh, fine. If it's consistent with Yahweh and is and just repeats what is already known, it doesn't have any value, but it's not that it's bad, it's just that it doesn't have any value because you already know it. If it's inconsistent with Yahweh, it's like Paul. Once you know that Paul is a false prophet, once you know that he is the plague of death, then nothing he says has merit. When Yahweh was saying that the wolf in sheep's clothing was going to lead people away from him. You know, he went through this whole dissertation on fruit and trees.
Yeah,
and it's not because he wanted you to know how to
prune
plant and harvest. Yeah, how to prune your trees and harvest your crop. He said, if it's a good tree, only good comes from it. If it's a bad tree, only bad comes from it. And there's no good from a bad tree, and there's no bad from a good tree. Therefore, if Paul is a false prophet, there's nothing that he says that's good.
No good fruit from that tree. That would be a Larry's favorite verse. No, he
yeah.
pulled that one out.
Yeah. No good fruit from that tree. So Aruna asked, why has my Lord, my master, now he's speaking, you know, in terms
yes.
of governance.
And as king.
He's king. Why has my Lord and king come to his servant? And Dode said, for the purpose of purchasing your threshing floor, in order to build a place to make an offering of thanksgiving to approach Yahweh. So then the plague of death will be continually held back from the people. Now, it's interesting here that what was going to transpire with the offer of thanksgiving on that threshing floor was going to keep the plague of death from continually to hold sway against people. Yeah, already pulled back the sword, didn't he? That sword of death.
Oh, yeah.
So plague was no longer killing people. So what was going to transpire on that threshing floor, Doe realized was going to have ongoing consequence. It would be an eternal remedy to the plague of death. Otherwise, the statement makes no sense. It is
this
the
is an amazing
remedy.
Story, you know. I mean, I know it's kind of silly, it comes to mind, but it's just, this is like a little window in time of, you know, this is the place, man. This is what's going to happen. This is, wow.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And, of course, this threshing floor, which is now where grain, representing saved souls, and chaff, representing those who are going to die and be cast aside, that is where the offer of thanksgiving, a sacrificial offering, is going to be made.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's where, performed. That not only with providing the lamb for Abraham and Yishak, but also being the lamb of God for the rest of us on Pesach and having his home on that site. Then Aruna said to Dote, I just want him to take it because I want him to lift up him as in Yahweh, to lift up my Lord the King, doing what is generous and good in his sight. Look, there are cattle for the uplifting offering, the threshing implements, and the wooden yokes for the oxen. You know, he's saying here, listen, I don't want to just give him the threshing floor, but I'm going to give him the basis of the offering.
Work. Yeah.
Right, and,
yeah.
And by the way, once you give the oxen for the offering, that threshing floor is useless. I'm going to give him the oxen for the offering, and I'm going to give him the implements that were used, as implements would be in the house of Yahweh. I'm going to give him the implements that were used to separate the grain from the chaff. I'm going to give it to all of this. And it's, Yahweh doesn't communicate things for no reason. It's important to know it was a threshing floor. There were oxen. The means to pull the threshing implements. The threshing implements, the sled, which was comprised of heavy wood beams and stone to separate the grain and the chaff. And the wooden yokes that the oxen would wear as they were being burdened with pulling this. I mean, it was going to take work to separate the grain from the chaff. But Aruna said, I'll give it all to you. And Aruna said to the king, may Yahweh, your God, choose to accept you, be pleased with you, and make amends with you. I mean, Aruna's the smartest guy in the story.
Exactly.
Now, what's really good about this, too, okay, the Yehudim are Yahweh's chosen people.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. But who's the bright, shining star in this story?
The Jebusi's got it all together. He's the only one. So
right,
far.
Yeah, Aruna. And he is absolutely a Gentile.
Yeah.
You know, so...
gives us all hope, don't it?
Right, it gives us hope, and particularly since the three of us are predominantly Gentiles.
Go ahead.
And here, and here we are, you know, struggling to share Yahweh's testimony as capably as we can. Mm-hmm. Are we any different than Aruna?
Not a bit.
And by the way, here is Aruna sharing this wisdom with, of all people, the most articulate spokesperson for Yahweh of all time.
What
so,
yeah.
So, yeah. So, does God have anything against us Gentiles chipping in from time to time? Even in...
Apparently
the,
not.
The most, the most royal of company? No. But then the king said to Aruna, absolutely not. I will purchase it from you. With you being compensated, I will not take up to Yahweh, my God, offerings without basis. So Dode acquired, accordingly, the threshing floor and the oxen for 50 shekels of silver. this is, I think, one of the most challenging concepts to appreciate, is that why did God establish the example of Passover where the lamb dies so we could be fed and nourished by it? Why did he himself provide his diminished manifestation, whose body would suffer and whose soul would go to Sheol to pay the price to ransom us? Why did he go to that trouble? He is God, after all. Why didn't he just say, I'm going to make it all good? Don't figure it out.
Then there's no compensation. There's no price
right.
paid. There's nothing. Plus, he's not. He's the one that's doing it, so he's involved on a big time basis.
Right. If you're saying that
it is a group. I mean,
it is
an effort between two in the association or the family.
Right. If God is taking I'm going to forgive without basis, then what's the basis for the Torah?
Nothing,
what's the basis for the covenant?
It's
what's the basis for any of God's instructions? If God says, I'm just going to forgive because that's what I want to do, because that's what I feel like.
Then there's no consequence.
No. How could he be just? At that point, who does he choose to forgive? Everybody.
Right.
Then it's not forgiveness. Because no one is guilty. What's the purpose? Why isn't every religion equally good if God, if there's no basis for Yahweh's actions? What Yahweh is saying is, listen, being right's important, and I need to have a means of resolving what's wrong. And the last thing I want is to spend my eternity with it polluted by all of the rubbish that man has a tendency to collect and to promote and to spread around. God said, I'm going to create a way that's going to be cost me something because I want to demonstrate the sacrificial love of a parent. And I want you to know that that I paid an extremely dear price to adopt you. There has to be a basis. And so Yahweh created the basis. And the basis is Pesach and Matzah leading to Bikurim, which then empowers Shavuah.
Therefore, if you don't appreciate and you don't celebrate Pesach, Matzah, and Bikurim, etc., through all the seven, then you've reduced him to nothing.
Right.
You've essentially spit in
his face. You're saying that your sacrifice means nothing to me.
Yeah. It's not even worth one day of celebration.
Right. That's what you're saying. Your sacrifice means nothing to me. And so that is what Dod is acknowledging here. He says, I will buy it from you with you being compensated because I will not take up to Yahweh, my God, offerings without basis. So Dod acquired it. Stunningly important insight as to what would transpire there. And then there, he built a place to make an offering of thanksgiving to approach Yahweh. Now, law can be translated for, but it is a preposition. And the preposition's primary meaning, to approach and to draw near. That's the primary meaning of the preposition. So then and there, he built a place to make an offering of thanksgiving, not for Yahweh. But was Yahweh going to be thanking us? No. Did it make any sense at this point to thank Yahweh? For what? He just killed 70,000 people. But if law is translated by its primary meaning to approach and draw near, then there they were building a place to approach Yahweh. He ascended, lifting up purifying offerings. Allah Olam, in addition to affirming an alliance of friendship while promising to reconcile and restore the relationship. Shalem. Shalem, of course, is the basis of Yerushalem, the source from which teaching and guidance regarding reconciliation would flow. So a Shalem is an affirming alliance of friendship, the covenant, while promising to reconcile and restore the relationship. So then, Yahweh responded to the request in a prolific and abundant fashion. On behalf of the land, the plague of death was restrained from Israel. Now, it had already been restrained. You know, they weren't in a panic mode of saying, oh my God, you know, we better do something before everybody dies. Already been restrained.
They already put the
Right. What would take place on that threshing floor, the Temple Mount and the home of Yahweh, would resolve the plague of death, which is religion, the consequence of religious behavior and teaching forever. It will restrain it. Now, he didn't say, by the way, that it was going to eliminate it. It was restrain. Why? Because religion, right to the very last day that Yahweh returns, will continue to plague. But for those who avail themselves of Yahweh's remedy, it restrains it. Then Yahweh spoke to the spiritual messenger, and he returned his sword that lays desolate into its sheath. At that time, when Dod saw that indeed Yahweh had answered him on the threshing floor of Arunah, the Yabusi, he offered a sacrifice there. Now, Yahweh had already made that decision. He'd already said, hey, you know, put it away. I can't bear this anymore. So, what he is doing now is showing, demonstrating cause and consequence again. You know, with Dod, he made the bad decision on behalf of the sheep because he prioritized his own situation over the sheep, and the 70,000 people died. Cause and consequence. Now, on this threshing floor, and the offerings that would be made on this threshing floor, as a result of that, there would be a consequence. And that is that the plague of death is being restrained. And Yahweh is now demonstrating the consequence. Now, I don't think there's any chance, too, that threshing floor is being repeated over and over again. I don't think there's a lot of people that are making the connection between the Temple Mount, the home of Yahweh, and it being a threshing floor. And why that symbol of pure grain. And, you know, even if you look at matzah, is matzah not grain bread? Can you have matzah without the threshing floor?
Nope.
Well, you got to separate the wheat from the chaff, so yeah, no.
You betcha. You betcha. So
you have to separate.
That threshing floor is essential to matzah. The only difference in matzah and lechem, regular bread,
And the yeast
that causes it to rise and be filled with air, no fungus, but that's what is there on the threshing floor. And so the other thing that's interesting is that Yeruna's name is constantly repeated. And you'd think that if it's going to be repeated that often, somebody would say, well, what in the heck does it mean? What does it add to the story? Well, it's the light of the ark, the free will associated with the covenant, the means to repair and restore the relationship, to transition to light.
Yeah,
already powerful name.
That's what to me.
Right, transpiring there. And why is he constantly listed as a Yabusi? Because he's not a Yisrael.
Not a Yehudim.
Right, not a Yehudim, which means that we Gentiles can make a contribution to the covenant. We Gentiles can be right too. Now, this conclusion, I think, is important for a number of reasons. First, Yahweh uses his malach, his messengers and envoys. They do as he commands. He told them what to do. They did as he commanded. They're implements of his will. The malach are deployed because Yahweh must either set apart and diminish a diminished aspect of himself to intervene in our three-dimensional world, or use his sabah, regime of spiritual representatives, to do his bidding. And in this case, since the mission was to show that man's way was a plague of death, he did not want Yisrael to end up fearing him as a result. When Yahweh intervenes personally, it is to serve his children, not destroy them. Second, the tool the malach was wielding was not a sword. I know that's what the Hebrew word means. But when raised against the people, its gleaming nature, this implement of light, may have caused it to appear as such. There would be no word in our vocabulary to describe it today, and there certainly wasn't one then. The term selected to depict it, however, cherub, is telling, because it also describes the chisel which would have been used to engrave the 10 statements Yahweh etched in stone. The cherub is a cutting tool. Also, it's the same word, the chisel. It's an engraving tool. It's what Yahweh used to engrave the 10 statements in stone. And also, when scribed in the verbal form, cherub means to lay waste, causing destruction and desolation. The point of being made is the plan Yahweh articulated is cast in stone. And it is about separating ourselves from an alliance with man to one with God. It is the only way to avoid the plague of death that affects all others and infects so many, cutting off and wasting their potential. Now, a third aspect of this is the implement, the cherub, was placed back inside of a nadan. A nadan is a protective covering offered as a gift to influence without a quid pro quo. In other words, it's akin to us being adorned in a covering, something the Yahweh uses all the time. Sukkah, for example, is a protective covering. Mm-hmm. Or the garment of light that the Yahweh provides. It is a benefit that is a covering that protects without a quid pro quo. It's a gift designed to influence us in the most favorable way. Finally, a sacrifice is required to redeem and to ransom. Our salvation is not free. It costs God more than we can possibly imagine. Now, there are two aspects of this, one of which I've talked about at length, which is, you know, imagine God going to the separation, the soul of God going to the place of separation from God. The soul of God had never been separated from God. And now it is not only separated from God, it's in a place where it is being menaced and harassed in the worst conceivable way by HaSatan and his demons. And it is dark, this place, absent of light. And because of the nature of the place, time simply existed, which means what was 24 hours could well have seemed like an eternity, and probably did. But let's not make light of the fact that the sacrificial lamb was judged by religious men, was condemned by political men, was whipped to the point that his skin was pulled off his back by military men.
Okay, yeah.
The three institutions of man that God despises most, religious men who judged him, political men who condemned him, and military men who whipped him to the point of executing him and then nailed him to the upright pole. Can you imagine being the creator of the universe and allowing your creation to do that to you? To demonstrate your love for them? Close your mind. Close your mind. The only thing to me that is more emotional than envisioning that is thinking about what God must think after having done this when men corrupt his and negate what he did through religious contrivances like God on a stick in Christianity. Got to really irritate him. Now, Dode's life proves that Shaul, the self-proclaimed apostle known as Paul, was wrong when he said we have to avoid the Torah to be saved by it. In spite of this and other indiscretions, Yahweh continued to love Dode, announcing for all the world that his beloved son was Tzedak, right, upright, righteous, vindicated. Speaking of indiscretions in Hebron, and I think it's important to know that Dode was considered vindicated, but he had his issues. In Hebron, Dode fathered 6 sons with 6 different women in 7 years. And he was just getting warmed up. In Jerusalem, he fathered 4 sons, including Solomon, by Bathsheba. Then 9 more sons and 1 daughter with a variety of other free women. This accounting, however, does not include those born to his concubines. So considering Yahweh's affinity for this rascal, his life shatters the notion that God is a puritanical cosmic killjoy, preoccupied with punishing fornicators.
Okay. No Victorian
Christians. Yeah, you got this one wrong, too. I know.
There is that whole religious idea of God just sitting up there waiting for us to make a mistake so he can kick us out.
Or God being opposed to sex.
Yeah.
Or God wanting to pummel anybody that got involved in any sexual perversion. God's idea is, listen, there's some behaviors that are really counterproductive. Bestiality is a really bad idea. Incest, really, really bad idea. Don't do those things. I don't want you involved in rape, incest, pedophilia. But God's got really nothing to say about ordinary sex. He designed it.
Mm-hmm.
He designed the equipment on both sides of that equation. And between the appearance and function, I'm not one to say, boy, he was really misguided to all of that. What in the world was he thinking? I think he had a pretty good idea. And he is not a cosmic killjoy. There's the whole puritanical thing of Christianity is wholly opposed to the life example of Dode. Now, he doesn't say, you ought to be like Dode or Abraham or Moshe that had multiple wives. But he certainly didn't.
This idea that God makes sex pleasurable and then is going to condemn us for having it.
Yeah. No. Now, when God actually even speaks about adultery, he clearly wants us to
be faithful,
Lord. Honor and respect our husbands and wives, just as we honor and respect him, and don't cheat on them or anyone else. Yahweh's fixation with adultery has nothing to do with sex. It is all to do with allegiances. Are you allied with the whore of Babylon, with the adulteress, with the prostitute that represents religion, or with him?
You know, I found it interesting. I was translating a verse, and it was, you know, the word translated usually just as prostituting yourself, and it does convey that. But what I found interesting was the Hebrew word for prostitution has a strong emphasis on the fact that it is being unfaithful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not just, you know, having sex for money. Yeah, if you wanted to do that and you weren't married, there was really, it seems, based on this definition of the word, there that was not considered prostitution. It was if you were married, if you were being unfaithful on your spouse for a personal gain.
Correct.
Yeah, and that relates, you know, you want to go, you know, as a Gentile, you want to go be part of a religion, you know, that's not being unfaithful to Yahweh. You know, you're not prostituting yourself away from Yahweh because you never belonged to him. Now, Yisrael and Yehuda did. And so when they did it, it was prostituting themselves. They were being unfaithful
Correct.
To him.
Right. That's why Hosea married Gomer. He was told to do so. Right. I want you to know what it's like to be married to a prostitute. All right. Now, as we look at the Book of Chronicles, it archives the testosterone-fueled lives of the Israelites. But throughout it, we stumbled into a number of real gems. The first of these reveals the purpose of the home of Yahweh. The second, Yahweh's affinity for intellect over all other things. And the third affirms that Zion and Mount Moriah are coterminous. So let's turn to this is 1 Chronicles 29, beginning with what we call now the first verse. Then said Dode, the king, approaching the entire community. I just love this next line. Solomon, my son, whom alone God has chosen this one time, is young. He is soft and coddled and gentle and inexperienced. And the spiritual work is of the highest order, extensive and important. Because indeed, man cannot approach the covenant home built on the mount except by Yahweh as God. Now that's a mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so here's the king in front of everybody saying, the only one that Yahweh has chosen this one time is Solomon. That is to say that, all right, he chose Solomon this once. That means he chose King James, King George, any other king that claimed to be authorized by God? No. This once, I chose Solomon. Just this once. One time and one time only. The rest of these kings, you know, that you're chosen. I might be able to work through them. I might not. But they aren't my choice. I did not divinely ordain them. This one time, he chose Solomon. What is Solomon's name?
So the whole basis of the King James translation is wrong.
That is correct. The entire basis of it. Shalma, which is the name Solomon, it's Shalom-ah, is from Shalom. It means reconciliation and restoration, friendship, harmony, and contentment, peace and prosperity. My son, whom alone God, Elohim, has chosen this one time, Bashar, selected, prefers, and desires for a limited period of time, called perfect. Now, can you imagine saying this? He's young. He's a boy. Teenager child. He is soft. He's coddled. He's gentle. And he's inexperienced. Rock. He is tender and not tough. He's timid and weak. He's untried, untested, delicate, and thus incapable. And the spiritual work is of the highest order. This is extremely important. Boy, that says a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dode was once young, but he was not weak. When Dode was a young man, he was immediately tested. Here, kid, I know that's a giant over there.
go fight this giant.
And I know that he's got the biggest sword and the biggest shield and the loudest voice, and he's killed a lot of people. But here, take this little sling and this rock and go get him, boy. You know, Dode wasn't timid. Dode never backed down.
He's already killed a lion and a bear, though, right?
That's right.
Which are ferocious, quicker, and bigger than even
right.
Goliath would have been. So he's a tough
right.
dude before he gets there.
He is a tough. He's a tough dude.
Yeah.
God likes tough dudes.
A man's man.
Yeah, Moshe was a tough dude. When he was saw the Egyptian that was armed to the hilt beating a Hebrew slave, killed him with bare hands. You know, Dode, at 80 years old, walked from Western Arabia to Egypt and then spent 40 years walking through the desert.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Tough dude.
Yeah.
Tough dude.
Yeah, 120 years, he's still wandering through the desert. I don't think I'm going to be that way when I'm 120.
How would you like to be Noah?
120.
I'd like to be Noah and build the ark. And you don't have a crane. You're gonna build an ark. Can you imagine
building
how many
the ladders,
how many
goes
sore muscles? Yeah, how much you're gonna go through?
Oh well, everyone you know is laughing at you.
Right. You're a tough dude. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know when Hezekiah found the copy of the Torah. And in this house that Dord was now buying the threshing floor to place it upon. And he found out that, hey, the reason that our enemies are about ready to destroy us is we've neglected the Torah. And his first order was, I'm going against all of the priests. Get rid of all the religious junk everywhere. And then train the priests, because what they're doing is wrong. And we are not going to pay the Assyrians or the Babylonians anything. And God's going to take care of them for us. You think that wasn't a tough call?
Oh, that's one brave individual. One tough guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's someone who really trusts and relies right there.
Absolutely.
I think he's braver.
I don't think that was faith. That was he knew.
He knew. You know,
yeah.
You know, it's, I don't think it's bravery either. I put myself in the position, you know, when you write a book that exposes and condemns Islam like Prophet of Doom does, you know, unless Yahweh has asked you to do it, and he's providing you your protection, you're dead. No way to survive it. So are you brave?
You don't do it.
No. No, but you, even though you're, I don't see that as bravery because you know that Yahweh has promised to provide the protection. You still got to be tough.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, man, I've had a lot of people say a lot of mean things to me here in the last few weeks. And I tell you what, if you're thin-skinned, you couldn't take it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you just flat out got to be tough. And what Dode is saying is that his son Solomon's not up to the task. Because he's too soft. He's not tough enough.
Yeah.
The work's important, and if you're going to do this work, you got to be tough. You know, Yosha, he was tough. You don't think that these prophets like Yosha guy? Oh, look at...
name a prophet.
Samuel. Yeah, well, you know, we're reading his writings.
Well, Gideon, he goes out and fights 300 with 300 people because God won't let him have anybody but 300 people. And there's
right.
6,000 Assyrians.
Right. So this mm-hmm. idea that God loves the meek and the timid and all that's rubbish. You know, I've had the pleasure, and we talked about it before the show started, Danny's, man, I tell you what, that is one tough dude. You know, the Brit who's now living in Germany, who has recently chosen to be part of the covenant, and man, I want to tell you, he is not only a tough dude in terms of what he went through coming out of Babylon, but he's no nonsense now. But he's really smart, but he's no nonsense now. And he's just no compromising toughness is extremely appealing to most of us. You know, we've had, I know, JB, you've commented on it, and Kirk, you have, and Roy has, and a number of others have. It's just refreshing. It's the nature of Yahweh. Here's a guy that you would have assumed would be the furthest from someone that Yahweh would have reached out to, because he had it bad. And yet Yahweh says, you know, I like this guy. I like him too. I like this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so being tough. Yeah, like he was writing a person who I'm going to go nameless at this point, but he just said, you know, I'm being emphatic with you, not sympathetic. The guy is the opposite of what Dode is saying of Solomon. And God is not asking us to be gentle. He wants us to be blunt and bold. And he says, because the work's important.
Well, you know, empathy is the whole idea of putting yourself in someone else's shoes. And, you know, for him, you know, he was religious. So talking to someone who's coming out of religion, he's been in his shoes. And
of
he's
course.
Telling them what
yeah.
someone needed to tell him when he was there. And that's the thing, is, you know, that's what empathy is. It's giving them what you would want in that situation. You know,
yeah.
And that's the difference between empathy and sympathy. Sympathy is feeling sorry for someone. There's no use for sympathy. Sympathy does no good to anybody. Empathizing
right.
allows you to communicate with them in an effective way. Empathy is very valuable.
Yeah, but he was saying here that he was emphatic. And emphatic just means I'm blunt. I'm just telling you, this is the way it is. Just really, in your face, I want to be blunt. I don't want to be any misconceptions here. And in this particular case, it was a series of miscommunications with somebody, and it was over an issue that, quite honestly, I'm flabbergasted on. There's this, and maybe it's just a consequence of the of what's happened to our ability to write with texting and with social media and the like. But there seems to be, among a number of people, a strong preference for verbal oral communication over written communication. The written communication is being blamed for misunderstandings. I see
there are
just
more misunderstandings in oral communication.
That's what I think. You know, Yahweh communicated to us through the written word.
Okay.
I can analyze it for days and continue to learn from it, where if it was spoken, and that which I didn't catch and didn't retain, just as it was passing by, gone.
Well, not just that. Think about the amount of time you have to reply. Someone sends you an email. All right, you have a question.
Yeah.
I can do the research. I can think about it. I can craft a response.
Yeah.
And then send it out, as opposed to on the fly.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. I am horrible with on-the-fly communication.
Yeah, plus the fact
much
I can prefer read
email
it,
where
I can
think
about
my reply.
It, and I can answer each segment of it one at a time, and then I can read through my reply and edit my reply before I send it. You know,
of voice goes for giving off, you know, clues, I have found that people will misread the tone of your voice just as much as they will misread the tone of your email. Because that largely comes from their, I hate to use the term, but their insecurity. You know, if they find it offensive or as an attack when it's not, they're going to find it as offensive and an attack if it's verbal or if it's written, because they are coming from a defensive mindset.
Yeah, my view is that there is a place for both. Yahweh spoke and he wrote. There is a place for both. And there are, from a motivational point of view, the spoken word is far more powerful than is the written word. For communicating, the written word is far more enduring and powerful than the spoken word. But, you know, the great orators of time were not interested in educating or enlightening. They were interested in motivating.
Mm-hmm.
And in the case of Yahweh, Yahweh's not in the business of trying to emote a response. He wants us to think our way to him, which means the written word is a really effective
far
way of communicating. So...
No.
this goes on to say, now, to the extent that I was able, I have established for the house of my God gold for the things of gold, silver for the things of silver, bronze for the things of bronze, iron for the things of iron, wood for the things of wood, precious stones for mounting, and paints and pigments of various colors, as well as all kinds of magnificent and valuable stones, white marble and alabaster in abundance. Dode is saying, you know, I've given all this stuff. I'm sorry, Dode. There's only one reason you have any of that stuff.
Shepherd.
Shepherd. No shepherd ends up with all that stuff, particularly one that's being hunted down by the king of the kingdom.
Yeah.
You have all that stuff because Yahweh brought it to you.
It tempted you.
Period. All you're doing is saying, you know, you let me have it for a while. I'm just fascinated.
I'm going to get right back to you.
Right back along.
Hey, we got this
and
project. Hey,
you're
the stuff you gave me. It'd be great for that.
Yeah. But Dode is trying to say, listen, you know, I'm doing what I'm being allowed to do, and I'm an old guy now, and I've really made a lot of mistakes, but all right. I'm going to go out with a flash.
That would have banged. Go for you. Go for you, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Then, yeah, good for you, Dode. Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's kind of, you know, I read that, you know, Dode's making a lot of mistakes these days. So I read that kind of like the person that, you know, makes the big donation and expects that, you know, God's going to bless them somehow with their gift. No, I'm sorry, Dode. you don't get any points for that. What you get a lot of points for, Dode, is you left us with the 91st Psalm.
Yeah.
With the 119th Psalm. With the 23rd Psalm. You left us with the 82nd and 88th Psalm. You left us with
the...
Oh, yeah, 22.
A ton of great Psalms.
Yeah. Yeah, so you... And you left us with the Proverbs. And you left us with a wonderful life story that we can learn from. And so I was reading someplace where... I think Danny was chastising something that I had written in a nice way. I mean, I like the guy, so, but he was kind of trying to needle me a bit and talking about Yahweh's way of communicating. And he said, you know, he puts a lot of humor in. He makes it entertaining, knowing that if it's not entertaining, we're not going to process it. And he said, you know, when you're trying to write to these very people, Keep your writing entertaining. You know, don't be overly serious. Keep it entertaining. Have some fun with it. If you don't have some fun with it, people aren't going to process it. And you know, Yahweh is entertaining. This whole story of Dode is entertaining. So it goes on to say, and beyond what could be expected, in my fondness and acceptance of the household of my God, for me there is the existence of a treasure. Shimmering brilliance and a yearning, a sense of being tremendously wanted and desired that I am given by approaching the house of God. Higher and greater dimensions that are well beyond measure, exceeding anything I have prepared or provided to set apart home. Now, this is Dode saying, all right, so maybe I've judged Dode wrongly here. I'll say, okay, I'm wrong. I hear I'm saying, you know, Dode's got all this stuff he said I'm going to give to God and aren't I swell? No, that's actually, I don't think, was the point he was making. I think I was wrong. But I'm glad I made the point just because we ought not think that we can give God anything that he needs.
I think that's a valid point.
Yeah, I think he actually made a valid point here. The valid point is, okay, I got this mounds of things that man values, but what's really at stake here is that what God has is a treasure of shimmering brilliance and of greater dimensions, and that approaching my God is so far beyond any of that treasure, you ought not even compare it. I think that's the comparison he was making. That's the point.
You know, this is rather remarkable when you think about it. Now, Abraham got to see what he was talking about.
Yeah, he was taken to the stars. He saw light.
Mm-hmm. But Dov didn't. He read everything out of the Torah. I mean, I know, yes, he talked to him through prophets and so forth. But, I mean, if this isn't about being turned into light, I don't know what else it could be.
That's exactly it. It's not just light, it's dimensionality.
This is dimensional. This is
right.
All that stuff.
Just transcending dimensions
right. And
becoming light. It's a powerful insight. By the way, we're still recording, but we're not broadcasting at this point. So, and beyond what could be expected. Now, I've had, my favorite emails from a intellectual point of view are from Roy down there in Australia.
Sure.
Everybody's got their favorites. I mean, my favorite in just in terms of being a brother and close friend, or happened to be the guy that I mentioned earlier that had confiscated 2 years of my life by conveying the stuff. Actually, not maybe even 2.5 years, because of the edits and writing the book Questioning Paul Twice. When I see an email from him, there's just something about his nature and personality and style that I'm very close to. He's just a really good friend. And Roy is the person who I like because I find what he writes to be mentally stimulating. He's one of those people that when I see his email, I said, I'm going to learn something here. And it's nice to be correspond with somebody who will always convey something that stretches your thought process. Now, the reason I mentioned Roy on this is that Roy has been exchanging letters with me and others about the Moloch and seven dimensions and the nature of Satan and all that sort of thing. And I have, while I have shared my conclusions, and I've found places where we agree and some places where we disagree, and we agree more than we disagree. I mean, probably agree on 90% and disagree on 10, and the 10 we disagree is probably the most fun. And we have fun in our disagreements. I view them really very positively, very comfortable disagreeing because I'm usually the one who's wrong, and so I get a chance to.
So you learn where you're wrong, and you get to be right.
Yeah,
that's always a nice thing.
But some places where we disagree, I cling to where I am, and one of the places that I have been constantly interjecting, which I'm sure it's going to frustrate somebody that is so intellectually disciplined. As I've constantly told Roy, I said, now what we're talking about here is a seven-dimensional construct.
Yes.
And we're in 3D.
Right.
And as a 3D construct, we do not have the perspective that is necessary to appreciate, to fully understand what we're talking about. There aren't any words that God could convey to us that would enable us to see that which is beyond our grasp. And while we can extrapolate what we think will exist in seven dimensions, we can't envision it. If you were in flatland in a two-dimensional realm, it would be impossible for you to envision how much larger, how much more capability and power and energy and space and time existed in 3D. It's infinitely greater. And you'd have no way to envision it, just as we have no way to envision really how light is the fourth, or how time is the fourth dimension. We know it is. And we know there are dimensions beyond time, and we can calculate them, but we can't envision them. So the reason I make that point is because what's the opening line here? And beyond what could be expected, wa'od, beyond what could be expected. Now, Dov's extrapolating here, and he's figured some things out, but he doesn't have it all, and he knows it. Beyond anything I can envision, and my fondness and acceptance in the household of my God. The household of my God is the covenant for me. There is the existence of a treasure. And that treasure is shimmering brilliance. Light. and a yearning, a sense of being tremendously wanted and desired. Oh, my. Not only is this treasure being transitioned into light, but I am tremendously wanted and desired by the creator of the universe. I've been chosen. My presence is anticipated. And what I am given by approaching the house of my God is higher and greater dimensions that are beyond measure, greatly surpassing anything that I can envision. Exceeding anything I've prepared or provided to set apart home. So he is absolutely making this contrast. Here I've accumulated what could be considered the wealth of the kingdom, the wealth of the world. And I've provided all of it right here. It isn't anything compared to what I've been given. I am wanted by the creator of the universe, desired by him. I have his love. He's going to transform me into light. He's going to increase my dimensionality. I'm going to enter his home. This other stuff.
Mind blow.
He just bobbles.
Didn't you think about a soul and grasp it? That is, and you're leaving your body, and you're still going to be alive, and you get to go through space as we think of, because we know of Yosha leaving his body behind. Then you're in a dimensional world that's beyond our comprehension. We can think about it. We may even make somebody like Rory may even do a mathematical equation that will try to define it. But yeah, it's way beyond.
But Roy does a marvelous job of explaining what the infinite increases are as you go from dimension to dimension.
Right.
And he was the first to help me understand how it's possible for God to have created a universe as vast as this one is. Without it diminishing him in any way. You know, all of the power and energy to create this universe, and it did not diminish him. Now, that is
equivalent of a strong six figures on paper.
Right. But in reality, it is exactly the same thing. For a seven-dimensional construct to create a six-dimensional universe, it's nothing. It's like us, yeah. But, you know, it's more than us creating six on paper.
Yeah, to create a good one, you need some artistic skill like Kirk.
He had to make
like
the paper, make the sticks, and then author life in the whole thing. But that would be the closest comparison. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then to conceive of the, you know, when God says, I'm going to enrich and empower you as part of Shavuah, as part of your family, when you're then able to perceive, you know, by us becoming greater in dimensions and being transitioned into to light, because God loves us and wants us to be part of his family, and being adopted in that way, well, the mechanism is to be freed to transition each dimension. And you know, to go from three dimensions to four is an infinite increase in capability and in power and scope. And to go to four to five is an infinite increase. I mean, I think it was Danny was saying, you know, I think my brain is going to be 1,000 times smarter. No, we're not talking about magnitudes of 1,000.
Infinitely smarter.
But we're not even talking about being infinitely more capable, infinitely more powerful. Because it's infinity times infinity times infinity times infinity. Right.
Mm-hmm.
From three dimensions, infinity in time. Yeah. Infinity in the fifth and sixth, and ultimately into the seventh dimension. So it's infinity to the fourth power is the increase. of what we're capable of, what we have, will have available to us.
Back to your point.
And there's
where?
So much of it that are interesting because, you know, being transitioned to light, well, light is not only a perfect source of energy, but what light enables us to do is to explore this universe and the next one, regardless of how large it is. Because this even
down
speed of light is not a speed of light is not a limitation because speed is distance over time. When time simply exists, speed becomes an irrelevant concept.
Irrelevant.
Right. So you can be at anywhere at any time. So the distances no longer matter.
No.
And your capability.
You know, time is the only one of the dimensions we have any hope of understanding because we do exist within it. We don't exist,
right.
You know, outside of it. So we understand how time works, so we can somewhat start to wrap
right.
our brains around what existing
yeah.
in the fourth dimension would be like. But that's the
right.
only one we have any hope of really understanding or having any hope
right.
of understanding.
Yeah, we even talk about warping space-time to have a wormhole to get to places distance to resolve the issues of speed. You know,
yeah.
we even understand how on light time simply exists with it. Time is relative to the observer. The time is literally defined by the speed of light. You know, there's so many insights here that are so profoundly positive that and delighting that we can grow from, and how, you know, as a as an energy-based entity, we're no longer confined to being stuck in time, nor stuck on this planet.
How much of this do you think Dode actually understood? I know we're just speculating here, but
I'm going to say
you're talking about dimensional.
I think
I would say way less than we do.
Yeah, way less than I would say that he understood more of it than I did 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think he understood more of it than I did 5 years ago. I would say now we probably understand more of it than he did. Yeah. So I think
because we got to learn from him.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Well, we got to learn from him.
But regardless of modern scientists still don't know more than about 4 to 6% of the universe.
He would not have understood E equals MC squared and why that makes why that is so essential to understanding here. He would not have known that of the speed of light. He would not have understood the nature of time as a dimension. He had a grasp of what God was going to do for him. He used the words in Hebrew that conveyed that. He was inspired, I think, to envision way beyond what anyone at that time could envision. And I think that until the last 50 years, and particularly the insights of Einstein, and then this reawakening and understanding Yahweh's Hebrew communications and the Torah and through the prophets, that maybe for the first time in the last 5 years, collectively as a family, we have in some ways surpassed the understanding of Dode, but only because Yahweh provided us his inspiration in writing via a great gift to us. He gave us this marvelous gift of the Hebrew language to plumb the depths of his insights. And Yahweh's grounds all of his revelations in space-time. And so he's constantly making comparisons. And so he's encouraging us to do the same thing, too. So the more we learn, the more comparisons that we can use, the more we can understand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're studying prophecy and stuff, and you start to see a much clearer picture because it's written, number one, it's written for all time, but it also talks about time and future events, and So you start to grasp, even if you're just a student of prophecy, you start to grasp some of these concepts.
Yeah, I think you can read the creation account without having any understanding of science or of time or of relativity or the Big Bang or any of that. Or DNA and life and the order that life emerged and where it came from. You could read it and get this clear picture that Yahweh created life, that Yahweh is akin to light. You would understand some of the natural benefits of light. You can see, you can learn. It helps you observe. It's warming, you know. You would know it illuminates a path so you don't stumble. You would know the benefits of light and so there's this story that Yahweh told that without a scientific mindset you'd get a lot out of.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have two advantages. We can look at it through history and we come up with a prophetic timeline that is in the creation account, particularly as it pertains to the fourth day and the seventh day, and what that means on the prophetic timeline of the 7,000 years from the time that Adam and Shawa were booted out of Eden to the 6,000 years till we return and the 7,000 years resuming life in Eden. You could have figured that out.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier now than it was then. But, of course, now we have the layer of science that we can add to it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the most profound insights in the world is applying science to the creation account and figuring it out. You know, so, yeah, I think we have some real advantages.
The biggest difference in my life.
Yeah. Now, that said, while we have advantages that Dode did not have, and we certainly have advantages that Moshe and Noach and the like did not have. They were direct conduits of Yahweh's revelation.
Oh, yeah.
Yahweh spoke directly to them, interacted directly with them, and told their story to leave a living legacy that would enlighten all of us, that we could all learn from. So there's a tremendous difference between Kirk, you being in the covenant, mm-hmm. and Yahweh founding the covenant with Abraham.
Sure.
So we can know more than Abraham.
You know, if you read something like, you know, Elijah's description of one of the visions he saw, you know, they saw things and knew things that they had no way of describing to us. Yeah, they mm-hmm. tried. I'm thinking of Elijah's vision with the wheel and all that.
Yeah, I know.
You know,
yeah.
What he saw, he may have understood, but he had no way to communicate it to us.
Yeah.
So we don't know
every
what
word
they
he
knew
could.
Around.
Well, I think he did understand a lot more than we think. But
motion, flying, and light and color. Yeah, brilliant colors, radiant and beautiful light, and all sorts of hovering and fast-paced movement and.
How much of that did he understand? We don't know because, you know, he didn't have the words to communicate it.
Correct. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. If you know what, JB, you're a smart dude. Or if you and Roy were taken up to the spiritual realm and you were able to see Yahweh and report back to us what you saw. Good luck trying to describe it.
Without sounding like a madman.
Yeah, good luck trying to describe it.
Yeah. So we don't really know what they knew. We know what they were told to tell us. By and large, that's how Yahweh communicated with his prophets. He told them what to tell us. You know, there were some like that where he showed them things. It was like, yeah, describe this. But by and large, it was, go here. Tell these people this.
And
they may have known and understood a lot more than we know that they knew and understood.
Yeah, and I can tell you that Dode right now is infinitely smarter
and
more aware than we are.
Yeah.
Infinitely. And I don't know if we'll ever catch up. It'll be fun trying.
Yeah, he was way ahead to begin with, and then he got the, you know, foreign download before us.
Yeah, it was way ahead, way ahead. That's okay with me. And matter of fact, you know, we were talking, because I made some statements that there's people that I like more than other people that are in the Covenant family. And I've actually had Roy chime in on that, where he says, you know, there's every reason to think that we're going to take our personalities and our preferences with us. Otherwise, you know, what's the purpose? Or why have any more than one son in the family if we don't...
They're all going to be cookie cutter.
Right. Sure. So we are going to take our personalities and our character and our attitude and our aptitudes with us. I mean, when we get into heaven, I'm still not going to be as good a... I'll be a much better drawer than I am now, but I'm not going to be at Kirk, at your level. You know, when it comes to programming stuff, I'm not going to be at your level, James. You know, I might be able to process things and come to conclusions maybe a little faster than the next guy. But we're all going to have our uniquenesses, and I think that we're going to have our preferences in who we hang out with. You know, I think that we'll celebrate the great feast together. And we'll everybody there we're going to get along with and, you know, have a good relationship with. But there are going to be certain people we just have an affinity for.
Yeah.
Well, I have plans already to be the little brother to Doe going around. Where are you going? Can I go with? Can I go? Can I go?
Yeah.
Can I come with?
Can I go? Can I go? Can I go? Yeah.
The annoying little brother following him everywhere he goes.
My thing is that you know, I want to go with people who are kind of gruff and ballsy and just kind of the rabble rousers that say, let's go over to this quadrant of the universe.
How close can we get to the center of that black hole?
Oh, and let's go see if what we can do to have some fun on this planet. Who's with me? We'll do a little experiment here. I want to hang with people that are adventurous, that are fun-loving, that want to laugh and have a good time and goof around a bit and experiment and see what happens with stuff. You know, and who like I'm hoping we can still have poke some good natured fun.
Yeah. Fun to tease.
I mean,
yeah, I hope it is.
Yeah,
I guess I hope we can
still do that. What fun would it be without it?
Right.
If we're all the same. That's a very boring eternity. About to say millennia, but no, eternity. We're all the same.
I think we will. Yeah, I think we are going to have favorites and favorite things to do, and we'll have common interests. And it's going
to
be
a lot of fun to do.
You know, it's like you were talking about with in regard to memories and stuff that we'll have. You know, to me, is about relationship as Yahwa is. I have a hard time believing that the relationships we formed with each other here, you know, in this time, are going to be completely erased. Yeah, we're not going to remember this conversation right here. Yeah, I don't see that.
We might.
I mean, that just makes
sense. I'm hoping that we will have a selective memory. Roy's of the conclusion that we'll have none, and I'm of the hope. Perhaps it's hope, but it's my conclusion that about 1% or less, maybe it's 1/100 of 1%.
Yeah.
Of what we have done and what we have said and who we have done and said it with will be a memory. Yeah, I do want to remember our relationships. I want to see you guys.
I have a hard time believing that those will be erased.
That's my view. Yeah, that's my view.
Well,
most of what we've done, we do have to have it either filtered or whitewashed or purified or just obliterated. But, you know, there's some things that I think will – and by the way, it will make our experience richer. But The other thing is that, you know, it's one thing to be, as Dode is talking about here, to expand in dimensions and to be given this treasure of life and just the thrill of being wanted by the creator of the universe. But sometimes you have to have a perspective. Sometimes you really appreciate magnificence. If you want to look at the Mona Lisa, sometimes you need to look at a Picasso and say, I'm going to go with the Mona Lisa here. Yeah.
Personally, not a fan of either, but okay.
Right, to have a full appreciation for how much smarter we're going to be, more capable we're going to be, it'd be kind of nice to be able to have some recollection of how much more limited
we once were.
Yeah. You know, in a positive way, not in a negative way, just for the comparison.
Yeah.
You know, know how far I've grown from how little I knew 10 years ago to how much more I know now, and then to be able to compare that to what we were able to learn then. I kind of like having some comparisons. Now, we're all speculating here. Roy could be right, and there's no recollection, and he may have reasons for that. Of course, one of the reasons is that most of what we've thought and done would make us sad.
It's not worth keeping.
we're in agreement that 99.9 has to be obliterated. But
the friendships are worth keeping.
Yeah, I think the friendships are worth keeping. Yeah, I do. I think
I should be able to walk up and say,
hi.
Hey,
Mark, how's it going?
Yeah,
we
talked
about
going
to do this. Were you serious?
Finally got
to
meet you.
Yeah, let's go do it. Let's go take our first trip.
Why not?
Yeah. For fun. Yeah, who's driving this time? All right, fellas.
Well, based on your propensity to go ride dangerously, I think I would put JB in charge of the bus.
Okay.
I wouldn't put me in charge of anything.
Yeah, I want to be the person that's got pushing the gas pedal. Let's go faster. But then
I'll navigate. I'll direct you. Somebody else do the driving. I don't want to do the work.
Yeah.
I'll be the guy going, take the exit here. Let's go check this out.
Right.
And
I want to go
see
fast.
That? You're going to say, you see that comet coming out?
And then stop. I mean, I want to be stuck in time again. I want to be able to do what Yosha did and to express, to experience physical form again.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I don't want to just go to that planet out there and be able to look at it. I want to be able to walk on it and to feel it and to
stand on its surface
and
feel the air,
to be able to to change things and work there and do things, feel the air. Feel
the warmth.
Well,
he created those senses for a reason.
The
stars. They weren't just
arbitrary. Right. And so, when we enjoy the feast, I want to see experience what wine and lamb prepared by Yah tastes like.
Yeah.
I do.
Here's that little wine.
I love food.
I want to hear
I'm a foodie. I love good food. I want
to
be able to sit down and eat a good meal.
Right. And I'd still like to hit a 300-yard drive. A little right to left.
The right to left draw? Okay.
Right there on a golf course that's overhanging an ocean someplace.
Adjust the gravity a little bit so you get a farther distance.
If we went to the seventh dimension and we operated in the sixth dimension, that doesn't mean the three-dimensional world goes away.
No, it doesn't.
No, it's still there.
So, I mean, it's still there.
It's still there.
So we must be able to enjoy it, and we must be able to come back and reduce yourself down
to a part
of matter where you could enjoy it. Otherwise,
You take your entire soul and personality with you.
Yeah.
And you can transition into back into light at any time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it'd be fun to go and stop time for a while and just enjoy the process.
Sure.
So just enjoy a good time talking with your friends.
Right. You know, it's interesting, and Dan mentioned this in his in one of his most recent letters. I've said it a bunch of times that I don't know if it resonates with anybody, but the Yahweh told us enough about the benefits of the covenant for us to desire them, but not any more than we should desire just being with Him. Like Dode says, hey, the great treasure is, my God wants me. My God is...
Yeah.
The creator of the universe wants to spend time with me. You know, that's the biggest thrill of all. And if God told us, let's just pretend for a moment that we had the capacity to understand and that He had the words to express what it would be like in the seven dimensions and being able to go and through the dimensions and then transition from matter to energy and as we enjoy the universe. Let's just say that He had the words to do that. If He told us too much, wouldn't we be prone to say, I want that, and to want it more than we want to get to know Yahweh?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a chance, yeah.
Yeah. And so God's not trying to bribe us here.
No.
He's not saying, you know, excuse me, because all these wonderful things I'm giving you.
Carrot and stick, heaven and hell. You know, religion is all about, this is the good thing you will get, and this is the punishment you will get.
Right.
And you need to choose between the punishment or the good thing. Yahweh's not that way. You know, it's you get to be with me, and here are some
of
the little things that come along
in my home.
That.
Yeah, in my family.
But I don't want
home,
you here because you're afraid of hell. I don't want you here because you just want the good things. I want you here because you know me, and you want to be with me.
And you want to be part of my family. Exactly. And I think if He told us anything more than we already know,
It would be counterproductive.
Right, be counterproductive. I think He tells us every bit of what we need to know, that we should, it's plenty to know. To know it is, we did most of the show on, you know, what is it we're going to experience there. So I think there's a lot that we've been given. Dode figured out a lot of it, shared a lot of it with us here. But I think we need to be careful that the number one thing that Dode is saying here is that the greatest treasure of all is God wants me there.
Yeah,
He wants me there. He yearns for me being there. He desires me. Yeah, that's the greatest gift of all.
That's pretty impressive.
That's pretty awesome.
And in that regard, we're all the same. Now, I'm of the conclusion, I could be wrong here, that just as we will have our favorites, God has His.
Sure.
I don't think anyone in all of time is ever going to be closer or more loved by Yahweh than Dode.
Doesn't appear to be that way. No.
No.
I'm good with that.
I'm okay with that.
I don't have a problem with that either.
Don't bother me.
I'd actually rather not be the favorite. That's a little too much pressure.
Oh, I don't want to be the favorite either. I'm happy to be wanted by the creator of the universe.
Yeah.
And because even if there are 100,000 people in the covenant, and I am the least loved of those 100,000, it's still more love than I could even imagine. So, I'm not covetous or jealous or in any way, shape, or form. It's all way better than anything that I deserve or could expect. So, just ecstatic to be there. You know, and I've long sensed that the greatest pleasure is going to be seeing people there, souls there, experiencing souls there, that you knew you played some role, some small role in helping get there. I think that's going to be the greatest thrill of all, at least initially. I'm sure that there'll be lots of things that are more exciting going forward, but that's the initial thrill, I think.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, you all have a wonderful Shabbat. I'm going to say goodnight before the thunder and lightning here takes me away. It's really been nasty outside.
Oh, really? Bad weather?
Yeah.
I'm expecting the same thing.
We kind of got laid down out here, so we're thrilled.
Yeah. In a couple of weeks, I'll be in Waco for a couple of days.
Oh, fun.
Are we on next Friday?
We are on for next Friday.
As far as we know, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. My guess is, I don't know. Well, we'll have to see what Scott can do with recording observations when he leaves GCN.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Oh, is he leaving?
He's been offered a job with down in Austin with Alex Jones.
Oh, sorry.
Well, you know, Alex Jones is GCN. So he works for GCN now. Alex Jones is GCN. The only difference is that that rather than working for GCN, which is exists because of Alex Jones, or working directly for Alex Jones, there really isn't that much difference.
Yeah, same thing.
And Scott produces his show a lot, and of the hosts at GCN, Alex has actually come a long way in terms of modifying his positions to the point where it's...
Well, did you hear the big story about him this week?
What's that?
No. Apparently he's going through a major divorce, and as part of the proceedings when his wife tried to get custody of the children because of his attitude, his lawyer admitted that it's all a persona and a character he plays on a radio show.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, so he had to admit that he's lying. He's making up everything he's doing as part of a character to promote a radio show. This is not really what you think. Which anybody who has even remotely part of a brain knows, there's no way this guy is that over the top.
Well, look at Rush Limbaugh. I mean, Rush Limbaugh had imaginary characters. He was talking to Stardley and all that. They're imaginary characters. You know, and he kept on talking about the excellence in broadcasting network and how he has talent on loan by God. I mean, it's a persona.
Yeah.
Entertaining. He's telling the people what they want to hear to take their money.
It's entertaining. He's not taking, when you're a broadcaster, you're entertaining people. If people are entertained by you, then there are advertisers, and you're paid by the advertisers.
One of the few I still like to listen to before he retired was Neil Bortz, because he would literally, he had a whole cold open where he talks about, do not take anything that I say seriously. I will lie to you if I find it entertaining. He was very honest about everything. He's like, this is a show. I exist to make money. I will say what I need to say to make money.
That's funny.
And, all the times what he said was true, and sometimes it was jokes. Sometimes it was, propagandistic, but he was entertaining always.
Yeah, I remember doing his show.
But at least he was honest about it.
Yeah, that's funny.
Whose show was it?
Neil Bortz.
Yeah.
Oh, no, my.
I did a show a number of times. All right, fellas.
All right,
you're going to have Scott. You're going to have Scott as a neighbor.
We'll talk to you.
All right, good night.
Okay, good night, y'all.
Good night.
Shabbat shalom.
Shalom.